This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Comics proudly presents DC Post-Crisis Management, a monthly miniseries exploring DC Comics crisis events from 1986 through today. Universes will die, continuities will reboot, minds will be bent, and eyes will cross. The end is only the beginning. Is the end. Or some such nonsense.
Good God, the lights of this place. God, why? I don't know why I've accepted an invitation to come all the way up here to New York City to sit down and talk with the head of the casual geekery. I mean, who is this guy? Stephen Ferrari? I've never met this dude. I don't know. It was just... I'll give him this. He had a compelling argument for me to, after all the trauma that I went through with Flashpoint and now with the New 52, to come up here and talk about this next big event, the Darkseid War. Apparently there's this big thing that it's leading to, and allegedly it's going to help me get through a lot of the craziness that I've dealt with over the last month or so. But anyway, here I am, New York City, pulling into Queens. Looks like, I think this is the place. If I'm following the directions right, this is it. Okay. Now, I'm going to go in here, and God, the traffic was murder. This place is insane. I don't see how anybody can possibly live here. It is so, so bright, but I gotta figure out how I'm getting into this place. And there's just so many people around. But, okay, this is... Alright, the door was open. That worked for me, I guess. Let's see what's happening in here. Maybe some... interesting bit. Wow. Simple alarm system. I think I can bypass this. It's not going to set a trap for me. This isn't going to be the Duke House all over again. Let's see what we got here. And... ha. Simple. Thought you could get one over on me, did you? Yeah, I know a trap when I see it. All these lights on and everything. Wasteful. Good God. But oh my. This is an impressive place. Okay, I'll give you this. There are comics everywhere, but man, I have never seen an archive quite like this one. This is beyond even what I imagined the inside of the Morse house being like. Okay. This is good. This is interesting. All right, let me turn a few of these lights down, though. It's a little bright for my taste. Now I'm going to sit down here and take a look at what the man has going on. I'm sensing a little bit of DC love. He's definitely a DC fanboy. There is so much of it here. Not a Marvel book to be found. And... What is this? Is that a Dandadio shrine? In big emboldened letters, it never happened, bro. I think this could be a setup. But I'm gonna have to play this out. Come too far now. No, we're so close to the end of this journey. Not gonna let them stop me now. I'm not gonna get one over on me, but I'm gonna sit here and I'm gonna think about everything that's happened so far and hopefully get some real answers here, folks. Stay tuned. We're about to find out what's going to happen now.
All right, time to get back to work at the Geekery headquarters. Got me some coffee. I got myself a bagel. Best bagels in the world are right here in Queens, I tell you. Oh, good. The lights are off. I know what that means. Is that you, Mr. Sellers?
Yeah. Hi. It was just a little bright in here, and I had to turn everything off. It's kind of my thing.
Sure. I don't understand. Do you carry that black paint with you that you put over the windows?
That's kind of a recent development. Some weird stuff happened with a lightning and the world being turned upside down. It's a whole thing.
That whole wall is a window. Is that going to come off?
I really can't tell you.
Okay. All right, no problem. It's going to add to the aesthetic. Can I turn on a light? Are you okay if I just flick on maybe this desk lamp over here?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, things were just a little bright. I was just trying to save you a little electricity.
I appreciate that. That's awfully nice of you.
Yeah, and I got your email after the whole world kind of flipped back to normal during that whole Flashpoint fiasco, and it's the first time anybody's actually invited me to one of their places. Usually I just drop in on folks and start, you know, this whole spiel about DC Comics driving me insane. And
I've been paying attention, I've been listening, and I've been worried about you, Russell, because this is all just too much for one person to bear. And I wanted to make sure that you were okay. So I wanted you to come here into a safe place here at the Casual Geekery headquarters in Queens. And I wanted to tell you that everything was going to be okay because everything now is new.
Oh, so my theory about like all the titles being hits in the New 52 was correct, and like all the creators had like really good, long, extended runs?
Well, you know, everything is new. That's all you need to know. It's new. Everything that is new is better.
So Static Shock is still going?
And now, well, no.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not. I didn't say it was long-lasting. I said it was better.
Uh-huh.
The quality does not equal quantity in the comics world. We have to keep going with number ones. Otherwise, nobody's going to buy anything. Everything's got... That's why you got to go with new. If it becomes old, it's not good. If it goes too long, it's not new anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm cool with like you know certain new stuff. I mean, they want to try out a new costume for a little while. That makes sense, but
the costumes. Oh, the costumes.
Yeah,
those are the very definition of newer is better. I mean, who wears their underwear on the outside of their pants? What is that about? Is that really necessary? No. So we get rid of it. That's new. It's good. It's better. We need to see the Flash. You know, his costume now is made up of got to be about 150 different pieces, and they're all seamed, and you can see every single one. You know why? Because we painted them yellow. These are all beautiful things. Everything about this is just perfection. And I wanted you to come here, and I wanted you to sit down, and I wanted you to talk to me so that we could see just how good everything was now. Everything is going to be okay because the new 52 is here.
Yeah. Well, now that I'm seeing some details here, it seems like a lot of creators and editorial weren't really getting along during this whole, at least in the outset of this initiative. Fans seem to be getting a little miffed with like certain story directions. It's like a lot of stuff's been jettisoned, and like I'm still not really clear on how Batman had five Robins within 5 years. I mean, it seems like a lot of turnover going on here in more ways than one.
Those internship programs, they don't last very long.
That's fair enough.
But you got to get somebody in you know, you teach them how to get you your coffee. They get killed by a crazy clown with a crowbar. You got to get somebody else doing.
Or in Dick Grayson's case, gets killed by Lex Luthor and then immediately brought back to life during a crime syndicate invasion because that was a thing.
And then becomes a super spy.
Yeah, and I'm like, what, it's the very definition of what are we doing? It's, I'm a little flabbergasted. I feel like I need something that's going to feel a little familiar because all of this is just, it's a little much for me, especially the stuff that's happened with Superman. I just don't know how to take it.
Well, look, it's not, you know what's not new? Being married. You got to get rid of that. Everything, look, if we learned anything from Spider-Man, and we are in the home of Spider-Man right now, we should look over to that marvelous competition. Uh-huh. Marriage, you know, who needs it?
Yeah.
Don't tell my wife isn't. Yeah. She's not here.
Well, there.
The lights are off.
Well, I mean, now DC is like trying to say that this never happened.
Bro.
Uh-oh.
It never happened.
Oh, no.
Dan, how did you get in here?
Dan is here?
Yeah, look, I've been having... He likes to drop by because he likes my comic videos.
Oh.
Bro, listen to me. The marriages never happened, okay? It's just... they're not a thing. Everything is new. I've been trying to tell him that, Dan. Just, can you go, please?
I mean, it's impressive that you've got, like, Dan DiDio, co-publisher of DC Comics. Wait, you know him?
Yeah, we met a couple. We've met a couple times. He's stepped on my foot a couple times at the in various places, and he wanted to apologize.
Yeah, I've heard he's a large-footed individual.
He has huge feet, but then so do I.
Ah.
So, you know, when it happens, it happens. And the two things come into the same place, bad things happen.
That must have been where he got the idea for armored boots.
After I met him at a signing for Justice League number one, and he walked into the room. He stepped on my foot, second time he's ever done that. And he wanted to apologize. He came over to the offices. He outfitted it all with these beautiful posters of the new 52. You can see all these great collars and everything. And it really just opened my eyes to how wonderful collars are. I don't go anywhere now without I sewed on collars to all of my outfits.
I was noticing that on your shirt. I was wondering if that was by design or if you just forgot to flip it back down.
Yeah, no, he had Jim come over and starch all of my shirts.
Well, you know, I can appreciate a man who's committed to his look.
It's you know what? I see the popularity of it. I understand completely.
Now, the 80s are back.
Yeah, and I especially enjoy it since I can't do anything about it. I've been trying to get these collars down forever. Jim Lee did a great job starching these things. It's amazing.
He really hangs in there, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, he doesn't do anything half-assed. Everything is 100%.
That must be why it takes so freaking long. But I digress.
That last time where he was supposed to be drawing comic books and it got delayed, yeah, he was here starching my shirt. I was trying to get him to leave. I was like, Jim, you got to draw. No, you're going to starch? Okay.
Well, now we know who to blame for all of this.
And yeah.
So, like, you invited me here, and I was intrigued by the casual geekery aesthetics of it all, and that you were volunteering to help me out here. And I'm sure that there's at least one event that you want to tell me about that we want to talk about as we try to forge our way through this new 52 continuity. But before I do that, since I am recording this for posterity, tell me a little bit about the casual geekery. What is it? What does it do?
Casual geekery is, I would say, I like to say casual geekery is your new favorite place on the internet, but let's be honest, it's your new second favorite place on the internet. the first favorite places will be and always will and always is placetobenation.com.
Very true.
Yeah. But if, you know, you're looking for a second favorite place on the internet, that's it. TheCasualGeekery.com has reviews of TV, comics, movies, music. It's really just things that I like to geek out about. And me and a couple of people that I know come together and get some things going every week.
Wow. You certainly have extended a friendly hand to me, and I think that anyone listening to this should definitely go check out that website. And, you know, I appreciate you being, you know, so open and leaving your office door open for me to come in and explore things before you got here. I do apologize for the mess that you're going to find later.
That's probably best that the lights are on, huh?
Yeah, that's the other side of the gimmick. Because I tend to get a little hand happy with comics. That really came out wrong. Let me try that again.
Yeah. Listen, why don't you just take anything that you touch, just take it with you. It's okay. Dan will replace it. He owes me for the shirts anyway.
The generosity continues. But let's talk about an event that I was somewhat intrigued by as I was reading through everything that's been happening, and that was the Dark Side War from Geoff Johns. What can you tell me about that one?
So, in order to show you that things are okay and that the New 52 is everything is nice and good and happy, we're gonna fast forward to the end of it. 5 years worth of comic books. Don't worry about those. Don't worry about any of whatever it was that was happening. Let's go. Let's fast forward all the way to the end.
That works. I can deal with
Dark that. Darkseid back.
He's
the Justice League defeated him at the beginning. Mm-hmm. The first their first battle when with their newer is better with their new team. That no longer includes a Martian and instead has a cyborg. Their first battle was against Darkseid, who came to destroy the Earth, and they fought him back. They defeated him. They were the first groups of people to fight back Darkseid and not allow him to destroy their planet. And he has spent 4 or 5 years seething, angry, and he continues to seethe and be angry until the Anti-Monitor comes back.
Oh, here's someone we haven't seen since the first episode that Todd Weber and I were talking about.
It was time for him to return and not just as a severed head as a member of the Sinestro Corps.
That's fair.
Whatever that was all about. But Geoff Johns has a proclivity for the Anti-Monitor. Like I said, he made him a part of the Sinestro Corps, but now he's much smaller. He shrunk a little bit. I think he was in the wash with one of my shirts, and he's out. He's ready. He's coming back, and he wants to take Darkseid out because Darkseid's daughter, who we've never heard about before, because why would we? Has recruited him to kill Darkseid.
Yeah, she was an interesting character. I remember her being mentioned in Justice League Origin, the first Geoff Johns arc, but then it was like, never again.
Yeah, Geoff likes to play the long game with some of these things. He plants those seeds and then waits 45, 50 issues before anything pops out. And this is a prime example of that, because we had a little bit of a tease in that during the first story arc in the first 6 issues. And we all spent like 3.5 years going, who the hell is Grail?
What? Yes, I wouldn't know.
Are they ever going to do that? And, you know, go big or go home, man. Like, he brought Grail back in a big way. Daughter of Darkseid and an Amazon, who, again, not even Wonder Woman had heard of. And she wants to take down Daddy. And who better to take down the baddest dude of them all than the the guy who destroyed countless, I guess it would be infinite Earths.
Yes, he took out everything at one point, like, as I talked about with Todd Weber when we did the first episode of this show, and when we talked Crisis on Infinite Earths. The Anti-Monitor is like the biggest bad of them all. I mean, no knock on Darkseid, but Anti-Monitor has destroyed multiple universes. Darkseid has, you know, he's still working on one.
And he really has a problem with the hippies, too. That's really all the people of New Genesis are. They're just hippies.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
If you can't beat a group of hippies, like, really,
and
what are you doing with your life?
And it's odd. It's kind of odd. They're nowhere to be found during any of this. Like, the whole New Genesis gang just doesn't even show up. Other than, you know, Mr. Miracle and Big Barda. But technically, still Apocalypse there.
I believe that they were still licking their wounds from that Green Lantern crossover. I hope you skipped that one.
No, I read Godhead. It was certainly an interesting time in Green Lantern lore, because there for a while, Hal Jordan wasn't in the pages of Justice League. It's I think there was a short time there where they didn't even have a Lantern. And Hal shows up just in time for this whole Darkseid War business to kick off.
And of course, he goes off, and everything's kind of okay. He comes back and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
Hal, what are you doing?
It's what happens with Hal Jordan. I've just kind of come to expect it at this point. Right, if he shows up on Earth, it's like, well, get ready, folks. Things are about to pop off. And this was, from my reading of it, this was no different. He shows up, whole world goes to hell. And boy, does it. Once the Anti-Monitor and Darkseid both arrive on Earth, it's a whole new level of wrecking shop. I mean, this city that they land in is just decimated. I mean, people thought that things got messy in Man of Steel. Y'all have seen nothing.
I believe they mentioned that they were in Gotham for most of the time when things were getting destroyed. Obviously, you know, there's a second Gotham City, because Batman would never let that.
No, like, but that's not even the weirdest part of this story. I mean, Darkseid is back because he's been looking for his daughter this whole time, and she baits him into coming back to Earth and wants to use the Anti-Monitor to, like, take him down in his current form, so that unbeknownst to everyone else, including the reader for a while, she wants to reduce him down to something she can control, because her whole deal is destruction. And
in order to do that, if you want to get something that you can control, and again, you need something new. Uh-oh. Because, as I've said, newer is better. And what is newer than a newborn?
Yeah, that
nothing at all. So we need to find a pregnant lady, right? This is Geoff Johns. You can't just throw some random pregnant lady in there. You gotta set it up. And thankfully, Geoff has already given us that path, because we have Earth 3's Lois Lane, Superwoman, imprisoned and impregnated in Belrive Prison. And yes, it's about time for her to pop.
Yeah, it's amazing, like, how much time passed for us between the end of Forever Evil and the Darkseid War, and for them it was less than 9 months. Stuff happens.
Those Earth 3 pregnancies are they gestate different at a different rate. That's another of the differences between the two worlds.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's not weird at all. And
no.
And of course, there's all the questioning of, who is the father of the child? It goes from you thinking it's Ultraman, the Earth 3 Superman, to Owlman, who's the Earth 3 take on Batman.
That would be Bruce's brother, Thomas Wayne.
Yep.
And, from Thomas Wayne Jr.?
The Earth 3. Well, it's not the same one from the Court of Owls storyline, but it is the Earth 3. No, they called him Bruce. You know, he's the Earth 3 Bruce Wayne.
Oh, they must have changed that.
And
they changed that for the new 52 because it's new. Better.
Yeah, no, as we have established, newer is always better.
Newer is better.
Tell me something. Would you rather have a 35-year-old Glenn McKenna or the 1-year-old Grape Scotch?
I'll take the Grape Scotch, thank you. Newer is better.
Don't let it touch your skin.
No.
But, yeah, he might have been the father because apparently Superwoman, as Geoff Johns implies, was really getting around. But as it turns out, no, the father of the child that she's carrying is actually their version of Shazam, their world's Lex Luthor.
Yes.
Who, as it turns out, was the... I'm just going to say reverse Shazam. Just write out Shazam and then try to say it backwards.
You don't want to go around saying Mazas?
Is that how you say it?
Mazas.
I'm going to go with that.
Sure. I just made that up in my head, and I think it sounds really good.
You know what? Let's run with that. I'm going to say that that's the proper pronunciation from here on out. And that's exactly what happened, is this kid turns out to be Alexander Luthor's child, but I don't even think that's the biggest revelation of this story. To me, it's that the Anti-Monitor was at one time a god called Mobius.
And the creator of Metron's Mobius chair.
Yes.
Well, not creator, but he at least named it.
Yeah, so the chair was his at one time. And he feels that if he can kill a god like Darkseid, that it will restore him to being his old self, and he can reclaim his chair. And
he's tired.
Yeah, he's tired of being this god of destruction. He wants to be the god of knowledge again. Of course, the Justice League does manage to get Mobius off the chair, or not Mobius, but manages to get Metron off the chair at one point.
This tour through post-crisis is really messing it up, man.
Yeah,
I'm glad you came to me when you did. You needed it.
I really did, because it was just such a large amount of information. I felt like Batman must have felt when he sat on the Mobius chair.
You know? Felt like kind of a dick?
Yeah, but
Were
I feel
you
like...
you mean to your friends again?
I'm kind of a dick anyway. Right. So that's neither here nor there. But... yeah, when I sat on the chair, it was like all this like info dump all at once, and I just wasn't sure how to process it. So I felt a little out of sorts, but you know, not quite as sure of myself as Batman is in this story. He certainly just sits right on that chair and just starts taking it all in like it's nothing. Even though something like that should definitely be driving him insane.
Well, it helps that he already was.
True.
He flies around the city without any powers, dressed as a bat. That's not normal. It's not anywhere near sane.
No. And here he is, like, fighting a bunch of new and old gods alongside people with powers, and he's just a dude in a bat costume.
And now he has a chair.
And he has a chair of knowledge that's telling him all the secrets of the universe, including the very intriguing and still yet to be followed up on Three Jokers revelation.
This is, to me, the best part of the Darkseid War and Geoff Johns' whole shtick with the Justice League. It was just setup after setup after setup after setup. And we're still... there's about six different things that they led into with this story, and we're still waiting on some of them because he's, you know.
Yeah,
busy writing Doomsday Wars, or Doomsday Clock, whatever that is. And once that's done, maybe we'll get to the final portion of this sometime in 2021.
If we survive that long.
If we survive that long, and we find out who these three Jokers are.
And of course, that's not even the point of this story. The point of this story seems to be that Darkseid's daughter wants to kill Darkseid so that she can gain his power. And the Anti-Monitor just wants to be Mobius again. And you've got the Justice League caught in the middle of all this. And this story changes lead characters a couple of times. At first, you think it's going to be a Mr. Miracle story because he has a pretty intriguing chapter or two that, looking back on it now, I feel like was kind of laying the groundwork for Tom King's Mr. Miracle series.
Very much so.
But then it switches gears completely and it becomes Geoff Johns' kind of ultimate Wonder Woman story. So there's all this like very intriguing Wonder Woman stuff, you know, all the Myrna Black connection there because she turns out to be Grail's mother.
The Amazonian assassin who we've never heard of we'll not see very much of it.
No, you're never going to see her again because she dies here at the end of this story. And
well, so does most of Gotham.
Everything seems okay, kind of, by the end of it. But, this story really is another example of the New 52 being, you know, really topsy-turvy with things. Up is down, black is white. Lex Luthor is suddenly a good guy.
He's suddenly a good guy, and then he's even more suddenly the god of apocalypse. And then suddenly he's not, and then he is again.
It's like, it was like he was saying, yeah, we're going to do it. No, we're not. Yeah, we're going to do it. And I'm just completely taken aback by that. But at the same time, it really does feel like since this reboot, they've been trying to find a way to redeem Lex Luthor halfway. They want him to be a hero, but they don't. They want him to be a guy that you root for, but then you feel bad for rooting for him. And I would say that this story succeeded in every facet of that. Because I root for him, and then I hate him again.
I honestly was never happier than when Superman had him by the throat.
That was an intriguing bit. And this is another thing that we should definitely touch on about this story. All the characters to me at some point in this feel like they're very well defined, but once again this New 52 Superman just never really feels like Superman to me.
Well, that's because this is what it goes back to what you were saying before about creators not really getting along.
Yeah.
And Geoff Johns never really playing by the rest of the rules of everybody else. The Justice League Superman, while sharing the relationship with Wonder Woman that the rest of the other books follow, felt more or less like a completely different character than the guy who was in the other books. The Superman of Action Comics and the Superman of the Superman book was very much a novice trying to make his way through, learning the ropes, and still coming into his own in the world.
Yeah.
Geoff Johns' Superman was the leader, was the guy that everybody looked to, and was the one making the decisions. And it's just so basically, it's like the New 52 was different worlds for every book that was a different universe for every book that had it in
it.
And
yeah,
it gave
confusing
everybody their own little, every book had their own characters with their own personalities. And even if that same character was in another book, it's a different character with a different personality.
Yeah. occasionally there would be flashes of that old, like, classic Superman that I would see, like, and Scott Snyder and Jim Lee's Superman Unchained, which felt pretty, like, classic Superman.
Right.
I liked Greg Pak's Action Comics.
There were a lot of great moments in the New 52 Superman. As a fan of the classic character, I was usually not disappointed with the books. I enjoyed a whole lot of the stories that they did. Not so much Grant Morrison's first run on Action Comics, but everything after that was well done. It just wasn't. But when the biggest part of the enjoyment of Superman is in the relationships that he has with the supporting cast, and they just took all of those guys, they crumpled them up, and they threw them away, and they introduced all these new characters. And remember, newer is better. And wanted to have him, and it would have been perfect had they given them all new names. But they gave them the old names, and nobody likes those old names because they're old. And that kind of brought everything down a little bit.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling a lot of the newer stuff they were trying to do with Superman there. And the Wonder Woman relationship, I tried to be on board with it to begin with. I was like, well, this is a potentially fun thing to explore. And, you know, it's different. We'll see if it works out. But then it felt like it soured pretty quickly. And had no, like, definitive direction, so it just needed to end. But then it did, and then they brought back Lana in Action Comics. But then they decide not to make that a romantic relationship. So, you know, fair enough. Lois never really came around.
No.
The New 52 Lois was never really a thing. She's an ancillary character who almost barely exists.
Yeah, I don't think that they knew what to do with her, because anything that you do with Lois will get people to expect that relationship to come back. And that was the last thing that they wanted to do.
And
in fact, it was the last part of the New 52.
Is Dan DiDio still sitting outside your office?
No, I sent him for some more coffee.
Damn.
He'll be back soon.
Oh, good. I'm going to punch him in the face when he gets here. that was one of the biggest glaring mistakes of this whole exercise to me, was the treatment of Lois, and the only time that she gets used to any real meaningful capacity, she reveals Superman's secret identity to the entire world, and pretty much is made out to be kind of a pariah as a result. And, you know, that's not what we wanted out of our Lois. It was not a good idea, and most of this book, of this story anyway, Darkseid War, seems to completely ignore all of that, although I'm not entirely sure that at this point in continuity that it had happened yet. It may not have, because Superman, like the other core members of the Justice League, undergoes a bit of a change in this story, where he and Lex Luthor at one point are transported away to Apokolips, and Superman's powers are fading away. So Lex comes up with the brilliant idea of, oh, well, there's solar energy coming out of the fire pits of Apokolips, so I'll just toss Superman in there, and it'll recharge him real quick, which,
you know,
does
for a
work.
Smart guy. For a smart guy, that was an awfully big logical leap.
It definitely was. It was like, if this kills him, you're really on your own, Lex.
I'm pretty sure that was just him trying to kill Superman.
I kind of wondered that myself.
Because there's no reason for him to expect that to work in any way, shape, or form. And I was half expecting him, when Superman showed back up in the negative Superman outfit.
We're going to call it photo negative Superman.
Photo negative Superman. That's new also. I half expected there to be a panel of just square on Lex's face going, damn it.
I kind of wanted something like that too. But I also just like the look of sheer terror on Lex's face when he realizes that the fires of Apocalypse, they restored Superman, but they also made him kind of a new god. So it's a double new.
It might have been the solar energy in there may have been infused with red kryptonite.
It had to
from Smallville.
Yes, the Smallville red kryptonite. We got to be very specific on that. But
Smallville red kryptonite, not the one that turns him into and gives him a giant ant head.
Yeah, not that. None of the weird ones. The one that just makes him like
kind of a dick.
Kind of Hulk-like, honestly, because he's in this whole, I'm the god of strength. I'm like the strongest one there is. So it's basically like Super Hulk.
Super Hulk.
But he's photo-negative Super Hulk, so that's what we'll think of him as.
He's also highly intelligent, too. So that, would that be photo-negative Super Mr. Fix-It?
He's not that smart.
Oh, all right.
And he tosses Lex aside and leaves him there to die on Apocalypse, and he flies back to Earth. And comes to find out.
And again, I feared.
And he, you know, comes to find out that there are, you know, lots of other new gods. Like, there's Batman on the Mobius chair. Apparently, Green Lantern like flies off at one point to head back to Oa since it's under attack by parademons. And he gets the powers of Light Ray, which were actually kind of cool looking, but they didn't last very long.
No.
Shazam.
I don't even think that made it into the main Justice League comic, right? That was just in one of the That was just in the one
shot. It was in the one shot that was actually written by Tom King. And I really liked that issue a lot. I thought that was really great. Very intriguing way of structuring that story. It was beautifully drawn, too. I want to say it was Francis Manapul that drew that.
Number I'd have to check.
I would have to look again, too. But good stuff on that one. Then you had, the Flash kind of gets it the worst of all of them, though.
Fused with the Black Racer is never anything that should happen to anyone.
It really isn't. Darkseid summons the Black Racer to kill the Anti-Monitor. And the Anti-Monitor is like, I got a surprise for you. I control the anti-life equation. I'm fused with it, so I can cause the Black Racer to fuse with the living host so I can control it. And, oh, look, there's a speedster. That'll work. And like I said before, the Justice League winds up just kind of being like toys for these two gods to play with.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And it's
Russell,
just,
is Dan coming up behind you and covering your mouth?
He keeps trying.
He likes to do that to guests sometimes.
It's a little dark in here, so that must have been what I was feeling, so I'm like brushing him off. And
that's not good. I gotta let me kick him out of the offices. I thought I didn't think he'd come back from that coffee run yet, but apparently he's been hiding. That's not. I got to change the locks.
If I knew he was there, I would have punched him in the face. But yeah, that's where I'm at as far as the story goes. It seems like things got super crazy there for a while, and like you were saying before, it was just like, you know, high spot after high spot after high spot, just a constant escalation of events. And Geoff Johns, being the master of the long game, keeps giving us new setups and new setups and new setups. He's
to the point where he hasn't had the time to, or anybody's nobody's had the time to go back and do them any justice at all.
It's been tough for sure. Because ultimately where this story leaves us is with the Anti-Monitor is destroyed, seemingly.
Along with, but not before he killed Ultraman?
Yeah, he kills just about all of the, he does kill Ultraman for sure.
He kills Ultraman for sure. Superwoman is killed by
Grail, actually.
By Grail. Yeah, this war is very costly for Earth-3.
Yeah, like the pretty much the crime syndicate is wiped out. And Jeff gets to do something as a result that he's wanted to do for a while, because he introduced the character of Jessica Cruz a while back. I want to say during the maybe during the Mesovirus story, maybe before that. And no, it was during Forever Evil. That's right, because she becomes the new power ring after the Hal Jordan of Earth-3 is killed. She inherits his ring that's possessed by the evil entity Volthoom. And he's, you know, kind of a fear monger, and it kind of works for her because she suffers from like massive amounts of anxiety, like a crippling anxiety.
She was agoraphobic.
Yeah.
She couldn't leave her apartment.
And when you find out like the origin of that, like the stuff she witnessed and the PTSD that she's suffering from, it makes sense why she would be that way.
Absolutely.
And she's a great character, one that Geoff Johns has written really well. And I always wondered where they were going with her story. And at one point, Volthoom reveals that he can overtake her body, like use her body and take her mind and lock it away inside the ring. Just like apparently the Justice League was not able to get rid of the evil cyborg Grid at the end of Forever Evil, because he's still been like floating around inside of Vic's programming this whole time. And when he comes out, he kind of does the same thing to Victor Stone. But not before Vic was able to apparently download his consciousness into Volthoom's ring so that he and Jessica can communicate and try to help each other work out this situation. So there,
obviously before that scene was written, Geoff Johns had just watched Independence Day.
Yes.
Cause that's basically the same thing.
And but without a giant nuke that's going to blow up a big alien ship, because they've already kind of nuked a city. It's like, we don't need another explosion.
I think the giant alien was the nuke this time around.
That's not a bad point there. Yeah, the giant alien was for sure that. He left a big enough crater anyway when he died. And then you've got this moment where Flash is like trying to... I forget who it is he's trying to kill, but the Black Racer is like running someone down. The Black Racer is chasing Barry because they've managed to separate, because Barry figured out how to move so fast that he could pull himself away, but the Black Racer is going to like catch up with him and kill him. And Jessica manages to override Volthoom for just long enough that she could put her body between the Black Racer and Barry, so that whenever her body died, the Black Racer would be sated and disappear. So that happens, and we all feel like, or it all seems like Jessica Cruz had just died, but as it turned out, the moment that the Black Racer touched her body to kill her, Volthoom had taken control again. So it was Volthoom that died. And now a new Green Lantern ring selects Jessica for her ability to overcome great fear. And she becomes a new Green Lantern of Earth in a pretty spectacular scene, by the way.
There are a few moments during this whole storyline where I feel that Geoff Johns is just going through and making little meta comments about everything that had been going on in dating back to, you know, the Silver Age.
Yeah.
And this is another one of those moments, as with, I believe it was Wonder Woman doing the boxes there, the narration boxes, as they make a point of saying that nobody questioned that Jessica was deserving of the ring, but they questioned why Earth needed another one.
Yeah, that was something that was said in the story.
That was my favorite line in that particular issue, and it just made me happy.
Great scene overall, and I mean, ultimately, where all this wound up was the evil forces are pushed back. Darkseid has been reduced down to an infant because Grail just didn't have the capacity to wield that kind of power. She tried to, but ultimately she couldn't do it. And Wonder Woman was the one that was able to, you know, find a way to take her down. And that's something I appreciated about this story, actually, was that Geoff Johns made Wonder Woman the central focus, or like our central POV character. And it's kind of like this is who he wanted to be writing in this story all along, because it just works. And thankfully, no one had to whistle a note to fix a hole in Forever to take Darkseid down. And he wasn't dressed as like a mob boss or anything. So that made me happy.
I don't know, with photo negative Super Hulk there, what would he have sung this time?
You know,
would it have been the opposite? Are we in that probably would have ended up calling Mixleplickin. That's not good.
Yeah, we don't need any more revisits to the Grant Morrison Action Comics. I think we're done with that now.
Yeah.
This was almost like saying, okay, Grant, you've had your fun, now go away and we're going to
I think the biggest point of the Darkseid War was to say, yeah, you know what? The last 5 years, forget it. Don't worry about it.
It does seem to set that up because in addition to the Three Jokers thing for Batman and then the big revelation that Wonder Woman has a twin brother who apparently was the first male to ever set foot on the island of Themyscira. That was a big revelation that actually did get followed up on later by James Robinson, but to kind of a disappointing degree, honestly.
Very disappointing.
Yeah, I didn't dig on that too much, but where all this really leads is the setup for the death of the new 52 Superman, because all that apocalypse fire apparently made him sick to the point where his powers were fading, and that leads into the Jean Yang run on Superman.
Which, by the way, is probably the best Superman story in the new 52 era.
I read it. I enjoyed most
of it. I thought that was the most well done Superman story in the main Superman books that they did during that whole era. It's a shame that it came at the end.
You know what wasn't good? Trenchcoat Hal Jordan.
Oh, come on. Trenchcoat, long haired, gauntlet Hal Jordan wasn't good?
Nope.
What the hell you say?
Nope. Mm-mm. No. Trenchcoat,
long haired, gauntlet, outlaw Hal Jordan. I don't know what. I cannot believe that my man Jim designed that. I don't believe.
I don't want to lay that at Jim Lee's feet. I'm going to lay that at someone else's.
I think he paid somebody else to do it and just said whatever on it.
That just feels wrong, and it read very like it was bland and boring. It's not like it was, you know, necessarily a bad idea on the surface. It was just not
it was not
executed well, and it felt like that's really what you can say about a lot of the new 52, or as they rebranded it, the DCYOU during that final push. But of course,
I always assumed that was a specific subset of the books that weren't necessarily New 52 related. They were just kind of ancillary to it, that they were just focusing on these people. That was the DCYOU, and the New 52 was something else entirely.
Yeah, it was a weird time.
Again, none of those books really played into the rest of the universe.
But then you had the Darkseid War coming to an end on the same day as another like really important DC book from Geoff Johns, and that was this thing called DC Universe Rebirth Number 1.
Which, by the way, the biggest tease comes at the end on the last page and of the Dark Side War, where we see Owlman with the Mobius chair.
Yep.
Which Grid has been downloaded into and away from Cyborg, and they fly off to the moon, and they are surprised to find somebody there who we never see, but he disintegrates them.
Yeah,
or at least he disintegrates Owlman, being the final member of the crime syndicate to get popped.
And it's like, okay.
And that kind of, and you know, if you read that first, you go, oh, what the hell is that about? And now this whole thing is going gone, and you don't know what's going on. Pick up the DCU Rebirth, and but you still don't really know what's going on. But it lets you know. It's a connective tissue for me that leads from Dark Side Wars into Rebirth.
And you know, we gotta point out one thing. I know you said that everything new is better, but something happens here in DC Universe Rebirth that just brought a big smile to my face, and it's the revelation that the narrator that you're reading in DCU Rebirth is Wally West, a character who has been missing since the end of Flashpoint. I've just been going over and over these pages of New 52 comics, like any time now he's going to show back up and everything's going to be okay again. And it was just never happening. I was really depressed, man. Like, I was getting down the dumps, and then all of a sudden, here's DC Universe Rebirth number one, and there's Wally West.
You've got this. You've got a brand new character. See, newer is better.
Hey, I'm gonna go back.
He's been missing for 5 years. Plus, he was the new Flash, so it still works.
And it turns out that the New 52 didn't just lose like the whole 5 year gimmick that they were playing with. And this is the brilliance of Geoff Johns. He says that the force, the outside force that acted on the end of Flashpoint, stole like 10 years of their lives and removed certain characters and legacies from everyone's history. And all of a sudden, it's like the New 52 isn't a reboot of continuity at all. It is continuing the continuity from Crisis on Infinite Earths, and Geoff Johns is trying his damnedest to bring it all back into the same circle. And I can't appreciate that more. I love that about his writing.
The best part about and the reason why Geoff Johns is the one who has taken the greatest care in the whole big event things dating back to, I guess, Infinite Crisis, is how plotted out he can, how far out he can go with his plots. And then if something's not working, he knows how to stop on a dime, turn it around, and correct course. And that is, That feels like absolutely what he was doing with Rebirth and with Dark Side War. Dark Side War very much, I just reading it again this last week, it felt like, all right, all of this isn't working. None of this is working. How do we fix it? All right, well, let's do this and this and this and this and this and set up something else entirely.
And it was so brilliant because he's found a way to turn all those stories that people didn't like once again, much like he did when he did the original Green Lantern Rebirth. He took something that was in continuity, Hal Jordan being Parallax, being evil, and flipping it on its ear and coming up with a new concept. And he does it again right here, but with the larger DC continuity.
But again, most important, he comes up with a new concept that works within the existing one.
Exactly. Like
it's just like he takes a chip off and expands on that, and he grows it out into something that itself, so that it feels like the old story is still valid. It's a retcon, that doesn't feel like a retcon, just a different branch of the story that's being told now.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of his writing, is that he's able to do that and do it so seamlessly, like it's just like it's nothing to him to do it. And I got to tell you, he knows how to write an emotionally impactful moment, because after reading Wally West's struggles through this whole issue, and it's a long issue, he goes to so many different people because he's still trapped in the Speed Force, and he's looking for his lightning rod to help him like get grounded and pull back into the reality that we all know. And he tries everybody. He tries Bruce. He finds Johnny Thunder, a former JSA member, and apparently the Justice Society has been erased from history. And he finds Linda Park, his one-time wife and the mother of his children. Of course, she's younger and she doesn't recognize him at all. So it's like this is the moment he starts to fully give up hope. And I'll admit, the first time I read this story, right about there, I was starting to feel a little hopeless for the guy. You know, like this may be the moment where they let Wally, die. Like maybe what Geoff Johns is actually doing here is saying, it really sucked that Wally was just unceremoniously shuffled off after the Flashpoint reboot. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give him this beautiful ending, a beautiful death that he, actually deserved, and, give everybody a chance to properly say goodbye. But then he gives you the swerve, and as Wally appears to Barry, it seems like as Wally is just pouring his heart out to him and saying goodbye, that this is going to be the final moment. He seems to be fading away. And then it just, Barry's eyes go wide. And that, I love that panel where he's just like very quietly says, "Wally." And the next one is this big splash moment where he reaches out and grabs Wally's wrist and pulls him out of the Speed Force. And all of a sudden, all of Barry's memories of Wally come rushing back, and it's all restored. And you get that beautiful Phil Jimenez illustration of Barry and Wally hugging.
And you finally get a feeling that all is right. And all is well.
It did. It's like this was the moment that I felt like my hope for the DCU was fully restored. Like, this was that moment, and Geoff Johns, by God, gave it to me. But he couldn't leave well enough alone.
That is his special talent, and that is what he does best. He gives you he gives you the payoff that you so richly just so much desired.
It really was. It's like it was that moment of hope and just and like faith restored. You know, like it felt like I've stuck with DC through thick and thin, and here was my guy Geoff Johns coming up once again to show me that sometimes my faith will be rewarded. And that's what the combination of the Dark Side War and especially DC Universe Rebirth number one really was for me. And of course, it wouldn't be a Geoff Johns book if there wasn't a huge little intriguing nugget right at the end when Batman is back in the Batcave and he's been exploring this mystery of the three Jokers. He's still probably a little bit freaked out over the random appearance of this speedster inside the Batcave and all the crazy lightning effects that were happening around him. And then he notices something embedded in the wall, something where where a bit of lightning had hit it earlier. And as he digs it out and pulls out this shiny object, it turns out to be the button from the comedian's vest from Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' Watchmen. And right then, the internet lost its collective mind.
I really, it is, that is some very resistant blood.
It really is. It's hung in there, hasn't it? That's it's not blood. It's human bean juice.
Yeah, you know, out damn spot. Like, it will not go away.
The comedian's blood is made of some really special and stern stuff. It was made to hang in there. It's got to. Then, of course, this all implies, and especially so in the epilogue that comes after, as you get repurposed.
The Watch on Mars.
Yeah, the Watch on Mars, and then the repurposed dialogue that were the last things that Adrian Veidt and Dr. Manhattan ever said to each other. You get this like really intriguing thing that seems to suggest Dr. Manhattan was responsible for the New 52, like for the removal of 5 years of history. And given what we know of him and what we've seen of his power set, that does seem entirely possible, given how he experiences time and reality and how he does seem to, he can manipulate it. We've seen him do it. So there's a whole big intriguing set of stuff that's happening here. And I gotta tell you, as my faith has been restored here in DC, I'm also, you know, I am feeling a bit shell-shocked. A little, like there is some post-traumatic stress going on in my own head. And, you know, I'm in a better place now because I can recognize that. And I think it's all because you invited me here.
Well, I was going to take you to Sanctuary, but I don't think that's a good idea with what's going on over there right now.
Eh?
So, we'll get to that a little bit later. But the best place to come when you need a little bit of help is New York City, because we're all very caring people. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I had some pizza while I was here, and I got to tell you, you do it right.
You didn't go to Sbarro, did you?
No.
Okay.
Local street vendor. Stomach's been feeling a little funny since, but it tasted great.
Well, you know, it hopefully tastes just as good on the other way. You got to go. Don't worry about it. I know who you went to, by the way. And, just make sure you have some Pepto-Bismol on your way out. It's on the... we'll turn on the light. I'll point it out to you. I'll just give you a bottle.
I'm going to take your word for it. I do feel a little rumbling. Maybe it's not PTSD. Maybe it's just that piece sitting a little funny.
It might be. Yeah.
That makes sense. But, you know, it really is all about the water, isn't it?
Yeah, don't drink the water.
No, don't drink the water, but I think it's all about the water they use to make the pizza. That's all I've ever heard from everybody that I know from New York, or like pizzerias and whatnot. They say that it's all about the water. And I can just nod and say, okay, I don't know that for sure. I read that somewhere.
Yeah, we take it specially from the East River. It's great.
All those...
Nothing wrong with that at all, trust me.
There's still a lot of bodies floating around in there?
I mean, a lot of them decomposed.
Yeah, that might be where all the minerals are coming from.
It helps you out. It's good for the system. It builds up your immune system. You're going to come out of here stronger and healthier than you were before.
And that was really the whole point of this entire exercise, was to help me and any listener of this show to get to a happier point when it comes to DC events and trying to understand it all. And I think that the takeaway from this one is DC Universe Rebirth restored a lot of hope and gives you a direction for the future.
Or at least the next 2 years before they got bored again.
Yeah, and you know my mind is a little fractured. I may need to go and visit a professional shrink, but I That sanctuary idea, that sounds intriguing. I may look into that.
Just be careful.
Yeah, I will.
Do you have a bulletproof vest? Because if not, I've got one in the closet. I've got a spare. I put one on when I go down to when I go into Manhattan. When I go down to work, you can take the other one.
Are you telling me that New York City is not the safe haven that I've come to believe it is?
Oh, Queens is.
Okay.
Queens is. Don't go anywhere else.
Nowhere else in New York is safe except Queens?
Oh, Queens is the safest part.
I mean, I believe that. I mean, I believe everything that I saw on Spider-Man Homecoming.
That movie did not lie.
I did not think it did. Every bit of it just seemed like this is fact. Like
they filmed part of it just around the corner. I'll take you.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. We can definitely do that. Like right now, I'm on my way out, but I appreciate it.
Don't forget that Pepto and the bulletproof vest. They're right next to each other. Here, let me turn on my phone light here and get you a little bit of sight. Dan!
Oh, Dan Dio, you come here, you motherfucker. Yep, got him. Got him right in the face. Oh, this trip is complete.
All right, I'm going to send you the bill to clean up all that blood.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. It's like the comedian blood. It's never coming out.
Okay. I'll just have Dan buy me some more comics.
There you go. All right. Now I feel way better, man. Thank you again for having me here. This has been great.
The cure to what ails you, brother.
It really is. Now, if I want to send you a copy of this show and then, of course, like future invites, I want to keep in touch with you. How am I going to do that? What's the best place for people to find you on the old social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Stephen Ferrari. And don't forget to also follow at @casual_geekery. That's your favorite place on Twitter. Trust me there. Well, and of course you can see, what I'm checking out and what I'm enjoying, several times a week over the casualgeekery.com.
And I absolutely will. Like I'm definitely going to be trusting all of your directions on Superman books for the foreseeable future. So that sounds great. And of course people can find me at @Russell_Sellers, on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, it's always a good idea, Stephen, to follow Place to Be Nation Comics at PTBN Comics, if you will. And of course, I think you're already in the Facebook group, right?
Of course.
Place to Be Nation Comics group. Yeah, man, we always have fun in there. So good times. It's been a good talk, man. Let's go out here onto the streets of New York as I find my way here.
Let's go take a walk onto the subway and we'll check out some sites.
And I don't know if I agree to that. There are people there who sit way too wide and get a little handsy.
I mean, if you want to go to Times Square.
Can we?
We'll discuss it on the way.
That sounds good.
All right.
All right. That was a rousing discussion with Stephen, all about Dark Side War and DC Universe Rebirth. But, you know, after all that, I think it's time to maybe head home. So back to the car I go, and we will see how this journey home goes. It's been a long time coming. We've had a lot of fun here on the DC Post-Crisis Management show, but as all good things do, they must come to an end. But before I do that, on my way home, I better find some stuff to listen to. So let's take a look at, let's see what the PTBN pop feed had. It was another busy one. Of course, you guys probably heard me on the Marvel Age crew back to wrap up the year that was 1970. See, what else can I listen to on my drive home? Ah, Jenny Miranda are back. Another Geek and Sacky. Geek and Sassy. Sacky. What am I doing?
breaking down Doom Patrol Volume 1. Hey, David Sunday's back. Another Sunday groove. Good close personal friend Greg Phillips joins him to discuss some of their hidden gems. Interesting topic there. Andy Atherton brings in a host of luminaries for the newest great debate, looking at sports and pop culture, as always. Kelly and Steve, hey, they're back. New song and songs with friends. Talking some Lil Wayne, Dina Carter. Todd Weber, hey, the manager himself. He brings us another pod blast to look at the premiere episode of Season 8 of Game of Thrones. That's a good one. The Hard Traveling Fanboys talk Power of Shazam and this month's Long Book Hunters. And again, Andy Atherton joined by Tim Capel to talk Ghostbusters and the fourth episode of Laugh In Theater. Hey, that's definitely going at the top of the list. That's my favorite movie of all time. And then, oh, this is a big one. Looks like the Hard Traveling Fanboys have got something they're asking from the audience. Hard Travelers for Hire is coming to an end with a special giant-sized edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. So Greg and Nick are going to be joined by a host of guests. Wonder who all they're going to have. But they're going to be taking a look back at the highs and lows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they kind of need other people's opinions. So after you've seen Avengers Endgame, send your full ranking of the MCU movies from 1 through 22 to nickd@placetobenation.com. That is Nick, N-I-C-K-D, at placetobenation.com. The full composite rankings for Place to Be Nation will be revealed on the show, so you better get those ballots in to make your voices heard. Now, over on the wrestling feed, we've got Jeff Machado, I believe, is back in the classroom and headed towards WrestleMania 6 in the much-needed 17th episode of Jeff Learns Wrestling. Man, that one's been a long time coming. JT and Chad were back in the war zone and have moved into 1996, looking at Raw Nitro from January 1st. And in the premiere episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zaney, or Zani, welcomed in the one and only Papa Mike Hales to talk about his lifetime of experiences in attending live wrestling shows. Greg Diener and Robert Silva popped in with a PTBN Network special looking at some of their choices in the GWWE Tag Team Project. And You Don't Know Billy Jack number 5, Drew introduces Jordan to the legendary Steamboat Savage WrestleMania Clash. And, of course, over at PlaceToBeNation.com, 8 members of the staff took part in our all-time pay-per-view draft. The posted piece includes full draft results, rosters, and strategy defenses from the drafters. Be sure to check it out and vote for your favorite draft. You can also check out our social media pages and message boards at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. Now, God, that is a load of content for me to go through on this drive home. But as we talked about, as it seemed at the end of my discussion with Steven, this journey seems to be all but at an end. I am getting a text message from, hey, it's from Todd. He's probably been wondering where this live read has been all this time. It's taken me forever to get it to him. What's up, Todd? He's telling me he's going to meet me at my home. That's okay. That's interesting. He says there, oh, we have something very important to discuss. Oh, there's a new controversy stirring on the internet. Oh boy. Looks like our heroes may be in crisis one last time. So folks, looks like we've got just one more to go. So stay tuned. DC Post-Crisis Management will be back for one more round.
Merch promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.